Welcome to Lights, Camera, Baby, brought to you by Mama Magic, your trusted partner in parenting. Whether you're navigating sleepless nights, celebrating first milestones, or wondering if your baby is growing just right, we're here to help you every step of the way. Today's episode is all about understanding your baby's growth during their first year of life. So, how do you know if your baby's weight is healthy? Are they getting enough to eat? And when should you really start to worry? Joining us is Natalie Matt, an accomplished dietitian, a mother of two, who brings a wealth of professional and personal experience to the conversation. She's here to share expert advice, practical tips, and plenty of encouragement for all the parents out there. So grab your cup of coffee, your baby, or just a few minutes for yourself, and let's dive into this essential topic. So, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us once again for another episode of Lights, Camera, Baby. Always a pleasure having you here.
Thank you.
So much to learn from you. And we really, really appreciate all the advice because we know that parenting can be a very stressful journey. And we're here to make it just a little bit easier, right? Mm-hmm. So, we're talking about that first year of life and all those growth milestones. And we know that mums can and dads can stress about baby. Not sure, especially when it's your first one, right? And mm-hmm. not sure what to expect. So let's start from the basics. Let's set the tone. What can we expect? What should mums and dads look forward to in that first year?
So your child's birth weight, immediately after birth in the first few days, your child will lose up to 10% of their birth weight. This is normal. They should not.
Yes, as soon as you take baby home, right, you notice that what they weighed when they were born and when they weigh them the day you're going home.
Yes, there will often already be a decrease. Right. And this is normal, but okay. It shouldn't keep on going down because that can suggest that there is dehydration or your baby isn't getting enough milk or formula. Okay. So up to 10%. And after that, baby's weight should be increasing. And we expect baby's weight to double. Most babies' weight will have doubled within the first 4 to 6 months. And then their birth weight will have tripled by the end of the first year. Mm-hmm. What people don't realize as well is that if you're, for any reason, if growth in utero was thrown out of your genetic trajectory, let's say mom had preeclampsia or there was something that was happening, that blood flow, that type of thing, that kind of slowed baby's weight gain. Yeah. In the first 6 months, we would see a jump up to all down. If the boy baby was born big, you would see a kind of moving into your genetic trajectory. So sometimes in the first 6 months, you might have a child who suddenly gains a lot of weight or loses a little bit of weight according to where they started to settle into their genetic trajectory. And so the first 6 months, we sometimes see quite a big difference and a kind of settling into that child's kind of percentile. But what we're then expecting with regular plotting is that your baby is going to be gaining weight consistently. And when you compare your child's growth to the growth charts, what we are doing in South Africa, we use the World Health Organization's growth charts, and that is meant to be a representative sample of healthy babies from around the world who were weighed regularly. They were fed in an ideal manner according to the World Health Organization's recommendations. And so we kind of use this as the definition of normal growth. Okay. That road to health is the kind of expected path that we think babies will grow along. And you don't need to aim for the 50th percentile. You don't need to aim for average. This is determined by your genetics. So if you and your partner were both like really big babies, your child might get to the 90th percentile and then follow, or even higher, but then follow. And if your child is following that path, it's absolutely fine. You want your child to settle into their path and then travel along it. We worry when we see that growth is flat, maybe your baby isn't gaining weight, and we definitely worry when it is going downwards. So you want ideally your child to settle into their growth trajectory and then gently follow that. That said, if you are measuring your child regularly, children don't grow the same amount every single day. They grow in spurts. And so it can be a thing, especially if your child is eating a lot more, drinking a lot more, and you're finding it really overwhelming. Remember that baby's growth happens in spurts. You don't gain the exact same amount every single day. And so you would much rather think that you're gaining about 150 to 200 grams per week, right, but it won't necessarily be every single week. And there might be some weeks where there's a bit more or a bit less. And so you're looking for the trend.
Okay. So besides weight, what are the other milestones are you looking for? I mean, that you can measure by?
The other measurements that you would do either at your clinic or at your nurse or pediatrician, whoever you're going to, they will measure your baby's head circumference, right, and make sure that that's increasing at the expected rate. If it's increasing too fast, that can be a problem. If it's not increasing at all, that can be a problem as well. So you want your baby to be increasing proportionately. And the other thing that is measured is length. And we expect your baby's birth length to roughly double within the first year. Now, if a child is not gaining weight at all, we view that as undernutrition, and it's an acute undernutrition. Mm-hmm. This might be caused by sickness, maybe really low appetite. It might be caused by constipation. Very constipated babies might have low appetite. But if you're seeing a baby who is not growing vertically, then we worry about longer term nutrition. Why isn't this infant getting adequate nutrition to get that vertical growth? And so it's important that you look at your child in that whole context, yes, to make sure that everything is gently ticking upwards. And if you're not seeing increases, that this be investigated further. I think it's also important to note that if you are measuring a baby on this scale and then on another scale and then on another scale, you're going to get variability.
Of course.
And so if you can, ideally, you want to measure on the same scale with a person who measures in the same way so that you've got more consistency there and the changes are more meaningful. I remember with my daughter, she was born in the middle of November and we couldn't find places that were consistently open. And so she would measure at this place with a nappy on and that place with a nappy off. And it was it wasn't meaningful because there was significant variability due to other factors.
That's so interesting. I mean, you take that for granted. I mean, when we were ourselves, we were mindful of that. But weighing baby, who would think? Now, you said something very interesting earlier about genetics, and I found that really, really interesting. How does genetics influence our baby's growth? I mean, are babies similar to what mom and dad were? Will they always follow that pattern?
They will not necessarily follow that pattern. You might have something like allergies or illness that might interrupt the growth a little, but even when a baby's been sick, we still experience something called catch-up growth, where after a period of decreased intake for whatever reason, your child will be hungrier and will catch up. We think that at least 60 up to 80% of our body shape and size is determined by genetics. And so if you are having your baby's weight or weight history interpreted and maybe they're saying something about, oh, your baby's really small or your baby's really big, that input of what I was like as a baby or what my partner was like as a baby can be really insightful. For example, my husband and I are both quite small people and my daughter is a teeny tiny human, and that reference is important. And we often phrase it as, Dachshunds don't make Great Danes. We don't need to aim for the 50th percentile for her. That's not her genetics.
Right.
And so bodies and children come in a huge variety of shapes and sizes. Please do not feel pressure that you have to manipulate your child's growth to hit the 50th percentile or the 90th percentile or something like that. Most of your child's weight and size will be determined by genetics. It is your role as the parent to be a responsive feeder, to honor when your child says, I've really had enough.
Yes.
And to feed them when they're asking for more.
So now you're talking about percentiles, right? So help us non-medical people understand percentiles. You know, what is it and why is it there? Why is it so important? And why are medical professionals constantly jotting us on against this percentile?
Yes. So those growth charts that we're using, they kind of represent a healthy bell curve where we would expect most healthy children to fall within.
Right.
And so if you think of a bell curve, it's this normal distribution. It goes up in the middle and then there's some outliers. So basically, if you are lining up, let's make them 6 years old. If you're lining up the shortest child, and they're divided by genders. So if you're dividing up girls from the shortest girl to the tallest girl, assuming these are all healthy, this is basically your percentiles will cover most healthy people. And then when we fall to the very end of that, that is where it is starting to become problematic. So that's where we start saying, is this child not growing because there's an absorption problem, or there's a allergy, or there's like, is there an underlying pathology? And then on the other side, if a child is growing very, very fast, why is this child growing very, very fast? And that's why I say as well, because we know that weight charts, and especially when it comes to calling children overweight, like that is not very accurate in children. All children grow differently, and especially in terms of genetics. If you have photos of you as a kid, take them with you to the pediatrician to be like, this was us as kids. My daughter says, I'm sharing because she's, I think she's magical.
Sure, no, we love it.
My daughter says, I'm going to be tall like my mom. I'm not tall, but the genetics are important. And so I think when we understand that there are, that those percentiles are to outline what we expect and consider healthy populations, the outliers are there to kind of trigger, is there a possible issue?
And then what about environmental and nutritional factors affecting, does that, is that, which weighs heavier, genetics or environmental and nutrition factors?
The nature versus nurture debate. Yes. It is really, really powerful because the nature, the environment that my mom was exposed to when she was in utero may have had a genetic impact on how she expresses some of her genes, like whether she expects to be in an environment with lots of food or not so much food. And so we think that the environments that moms are exposed to when they are pregnant can have an impact on what baby is expecting when they come out. And if mom is really undernourished, it might impact your baby. It might increase the risk later on in life of certain diseases, depending when this kind of critical insult happened. And so it's an incredibly complicated question. We know that being born in an area with access to healthcare, with proper sanitation, with access to health professionals is going to have a huge impact on how healthily you develop. Access to education will determine whether or not you recognize that your child is not developing at a rate that is expected. You might also be a parent who is reading and is looking up on books and apps. So you can see how the environment in which you land has a huge impact on how you grow. Because if I have a doctor that I can easily access and say, hey, this nappy is not looking 100% right, it's much easier for me to get the appropriate care for my child relative to someone who doesn't have access to that and might have to take a soiled nappy to a faraway clinic to talk to a nurse who maybe isn't, you can see how just being born in the right environment makes a huge difference.
Absolutely, because it influences your decision. So the more information you have, the more access to information you have will influence the environment you put your children in, the food that you feed them, the choices that you make. Yeah, you're so right about that. That's always been an interesting one, how much of it is nature, you know, and the nurture part of it these days, particularly, I think, with so many external influences beyond what we previously had as well.
And I think there's a lot of things that we don't know about yet.
Yes.
We don't know about microplastics. We don't know about endocrine disruptors. We don't know about this huge human experiment that we are. We're learning as we go. We also don't know how much of an impact that will have. And so I think the answer is it's very complicated, and we've got to do what we can as reasonable adults to raise healthy kids.
So let's go back to baby now, right? Now, when we talk about, is my baby's weight good, right? How do we assess this? What are those signs that baby's weight is good or bad? And when should we worry about all of this?
I think in the beginning, especially with your first child, it is such a scary experience. We don't have any trust. We don't know, am I doing this right or not? The first and most important thing to recognize is that your child should have a wet nappy at least 6 to 8 times a day. Right. They should hopefully be making regular bowel movements more regularly with formula-fed babies than with breastfed babies. There's this kind of line, once in 7 days or seven in 1 day is normal for a breastfed baby.
Okay.
But the first sign is if there's enough going in, there will be enough coming out.
And that's really, really important. It's not just a poo nappy that you want to get rid of. Mm. That is evidence in itself.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's reassurance that you're on the right track.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, that there is output. Secondly, is that when you have your baby weighed, they are gaining weight at an appropriate rate. And how often your baby should be weighed depends on you, the baby, what you have access to. And in the beginning, you might find it really reassuring to go more often. I often find second and third babies kind of like, yeah, you're growing a spine, get weighed so much less, and there's so much less measurement. But you do want to also keep track of milestones. So if your baby is not rolling over from 4-ish months onwards, or the typical milestones that you would go, hey, I am thinking something might be a little bit delayed here. And the truth is, babies come in the most unbelievable variety of, some can do this fast, some do that fast. Often I joke, like, you're watching some kid who can like shake their head and communicate that they've had enough, and your child is busy growing teeth. Like, they all just do things at incredibly different rates. But if you are noticing that your child is an outlier, that is something to discuss with your healthcare team, your trusted advisors.
Absolutely.
And the one thing that I want to say, especially if your child is at any kind of daycare or with anyone who is taking care of them, is to listen to them too. They see your child through a portion of the day that you do not. And if they are seeing something different to what you are experiencing, don't ignore it. Listen to that as well.
Yeah, that is so important. It's not just what we do at home. Be cognizant of, baby is at a creche, baby is at a play school. Find out what's going on there as well. Exactly. Now, how do we know if baby's getting enough food? Like, you know, are they eating well, or are they hungry? Are they too hungry? Are they too full? How do we get those signs? Because I mean, they're not talking yet, right?
They are not talking yet, but they communicate a whole lot.
Right.
So
don't be afraid, moms. Babies still communicate.
They do communicate
in so many ways.
We actually, when I'm working with older patients, I'll refer to, we all know how a child under 3 knows when they're full or not. They have these innate signals that go, I have had enough. And the way your child will communicate with you that I have had enough is they'll turn away. They might just If it's a breast, plop the nipple out. If it's a bottle, they'll get distracted. They'll not be interested in feeding. When they are now actually eating solids, you might find they just push it out their mouth. They purse their lips closed. They start getting grumpy or fidgety. A child is an intuitive eater. Mm. They inherently know when they have reached a comfortable point, and they will move their bodies, change their behavior to signal, I have had enough, please stop. Mm. They will also signal that I'm hungry by letting you know. And some kids have the tiniest little cries that their parents just go, oh, that's a hunger cry. And others will let you know violently that they are hungry. But a child will communicate with you. We ideally want to be responsive to those signals. And so force feeding children teaches them not to listen to those cues, and it can lead to weight problems later, because if your young child is forced to finish a certain amount of food, you are not giving them an opportunity to learn that they can trust their internal signals. So you really want to let your child honor their internal signals. You also want to make sure that you're offering them food regularly. Their tummies are much smaller than ours. So the same, like they breastfeed or formula feed multiple times a day. You also want to make sure that when they're eating, in the beginning we start slowly. You don't offer 16 meals a day, but you do want to watch how they are doing. And especially if your child isn't sleeping well at night, mm-hmm. This is obviously after 6 months when they're eating solids, that sometimes waking up multiple times in the night might be a sign that they are having a growth spurt and they need more food. It could also mean they're getting sick. Of course. So
yes,
it does it like there is that sense of communication. Yes. And you will know if you've got a kid who's pulling their ear or rubbing a lot in a certain space that maybe there's a discomfort there. It's not hunger.
Yes.
And they're so fussy. You can pick it's up not those hunger.
Cues in terms of differences between I'm full and I don't want to eat versus exactly. I'm not feeling well.
Yes.
And I don't want to eat.
Yes. To be honest, sometimes eating makes both of those better.
That is true. That is true. So is there a difference between formula-fed babies and breastfed babies in terms of watching to see whether they're getting enough food? Is there big differences?
There aren't big differences. There might be slight differences in the rate at which they gain weight. Okay. Your growth charts from the World Health Organization are based on breastfed babies, but the difference isn't so large that you go, oh no, you need a whole different growth chart. Yeah. And I think the most important thing there is to still be responsive. So if you can see this child doesn't want any more, don't force them. Don't make them have more.
And should you be giving them a lot of variety in their diet at that age?
This is an individualized thing. It's based on your child's temperament. So from the age of 6 months to a year, you are going to slowly increase both the texture variety as well as the variety of foods. Some kids are so happy to be fed, and they might be averse to trying new foods, and they might have quite a shy and timid nature, and they might struggle when you make a whole lot of changes. Other kids will eat what you give them and will not mind garlic and cinnamon and basil. And so I do feel that in terms of feeding your child, you want to make sure that you start introducing textures relatively early, mm-hmm. and you do want to introduce some variety. The reason being, if I only give you one kind of food for a whole long time and I never change it, when you start changing it, I'm going to be like, oh, what's this? And so giving more variety is going to improve what you're feeding their gut bacteria. You can, so there's a big kind of choice between, am I going to do baby-led weaning with my child? Am I going to do spoon feeding and purees? Yes. That's a very personal decision. It works different things work for different families, and they're both completely valid and acceptable. Some kids will tell you what they want. So when children suddenly stop eating, it might be that actually they want more body autonomy and they want to be able to feed themselves. In the first year, they are still going to be relying significantly on their milk, whether it is a cow's, whether it is a formula milk or it is breast milk, they are going to be reliant on that. We only introduce cow's milk after the age of 1 year, okay, when their kidneys are a little bit more mature. But below the age of 1 year, you can do your dairy products, a little bit of yogurt. You can do cheeses. Go light on cheeses because they're salty.
Yes.
Those immature kidneys can't do a whole lot of salt, and you don't want a whole lot of salty food. But that said, I do know the odd baby who loves to chew on a piece of biltong.
That's
and
true.
If you're getting some of that iron out of the meat, it's okay. The context, the whole diet is important. Don't add salt to the rest of that day,
yes,
or salty foods to the rest of that day. So you do want a big variety of foods, because by the time your child is five, you ideally want them eating all kind of adult meals off the table, that type of thing. And many people will say, even from the age of 2 years, you want your child eating only table foods, as in foods from the rest of the family. That said, especially if you have a family with any kind of neurodivergence, a tactile defensiveness,
okay,
really sensory profiles that are very, very sensitive. And normally it's like parents will have this as well. Like our children get their wiring from somewhere.
Mm.
And it's often when children are diagnosed by an OT or someone at school notices something that the parent will go, oh, but that's normal. And the teacher will go, no, that's not very common.
Yes, you see.
And so if you have a parent who's very sensitive, you might have a child who's also very sensitive, and then often those feeding differences might not apply. And I think we need to understand that sometimes children are not being fussy or not just being badly behaved. Sometimes the sensations and the textures are so much information for their immature nervous systems,
yeah,
that forcing it on the child can actually be quite uncomfortable and traumatic. And so if you do have any neurodivergence, any of those kind of sensitivities in your family, recognize that if your child looks like they're in distress when being fed, that might be a sign that this is really overwhelming for them and they're not being badly behaved. They might need a change in the feeding environment to make accommodation for how they're feeling. And so, like, is all of this stuff on the rise? I think it was ignored when we were raised in the 80s and 90s. And I think parents now know better to look at children and to observe how they are feeding and to be responsive to that.
Yeah, that is an important message there, because we can't just ignore it.
Mm.
You cannot just ignore it. We are aware. We are much more aware than previously.
Mm.
And despite our busier schedules and despite a busier world, we are aware, and it is important to understand them and see how we can work within those, neurodivergent differences that each child might have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when, you know, we want our children to grow healthily, we understand that they'll grow at different rates and different growth spurts, of course. But when do you think, when should we seek medical advice? When do I know there's some red flags here? I'm not being overly panicky about this. It's not because I'm comparing, you know, not all of those. Because sometimes you try to, you know, make yourself feel better and say, no, it's fine.
I find in the first year of life, babies are pretty consistent eaters. It's when they become toddlers that they eat for a week. And so you'll have periods where they eat a lot and then not. But under the age of 1 year, there should be pretty consistent intake.
Right.
And if for any reason there is a huge decrease in intake, or you're noticing that your child isn't gaining any weight, or you're thinking my child isn't gaining any weight, get it measured. So the angle of the growth change on your growth chart.
Right.
If your growth is following a curve, that's what we expect. If there is a sudden decrease, even if the growth has stayed stable, your baby is not gaining any weight, that can be a sign that something's going on. like I've mentioned before, could be constipation, but there could be something else, whether it's an ear infection, something else going on that might need addressing. And a health professional should be the first stop there to help really investigate what is going on. The other thing that might happen is if there is a very big increase for a short amount of time, a big increase, as I said, in the first 6 months, let's imagine that mom had placenta issues. Mm-hmm. You might see that baby going chunk, chunk, chunk to kind of grow to where they would have been postpartum or where they would have been had they not had that decreased blood supply.
Right.
But if it carries on, if this child is just going across the percentiles, that's also something to investigate. Why are we gaining weight so quickly? And so it's not to say that, you know, all growth patterns, if it's going across a percentile or flat, like it's definitely a problem, but you do want to keep an eye on it.
Absolutely. So what would you, if you go to your pediatrician, what would your pediatrician do at that point in time and they notice this?
I don't know. I'm not a pediatrician. But they would investigate. So they will investigate. And if there is something that requires treatment, they will help from that perspective. Something that we don't think about in South Africa, some moms do, is worms. So the World Health Organization recommends that as children be in the, when you don't actually keep tabs on how many worm infections there are, that you deworm twice a year.
Yes.
Talk to your pharmacist about what is appropriate at what age. That is a really important way of getting in, of protecting your iron stores. Ah. And it can obviously also cause distress to the digestive system. So that is the first thing as a dietitian that I often think about if a child isn't growing particularly well. But that is not the first thing we suspect in babies.
Yes.
In babies, there are so many things that could be a little bit off. And your digestion, allergies,
of course.
Inborn errors of metabolism, which are very rare and not likely to happen, but those need to be screened by a health professional where somebody puts their hands on your baby, has a look, listens to their chest, and does a thorough investigation to see what is possibly going on. Because sometimes it is a very easy solution. Mm-hmm. I mean, there might be a tongue tie and breastfeeding's really difficult, something like that, and that's why that baby is not growing well, but there may be something else going on. And then the doctor would make the referral accordingly if a referral is required.
Of course. But it's just important to keep an eye on that regularly to, you know, I mean, with your checkups, your regular checkups that you're still doing in that first year, right? To make sure that the growth is in line. And if not, then you know.
Absolutely. And I think parents underestimate how well they know their babies. Often parents will say, my gut instinct was something was wrong. And so if you have a feeling something is not quite right, seek the assistance of your trusted advisors. Yeah. I encourage every parent to have their trusted advisors, whether it is a pediatrician, a nurse, their mom or a friend who has had multiple babies and is just great with kids. Like, have people that you trust so that you can soundboard off them. Don't listen to everything on the internet. Not everyone is qualified to make a comment. And then if in doubt, always seek out additional support. Go to the doctor if you are worried.
And once again, exactly, that's what it is. It's about learning when to seek out and that it's okay to seek out, because there's lots of help, like you're saying.
I often say to parents, you don't need to know everything. You just need to know who to ask.
That's so true. That is so true. We have a wealth of services of amazing people around us and that's what they're there for. So tap into that.
Absolutely.
Into that. We're very fortunate to have that. So tap into that. Again, Natalie, thank you so much. It's been wonderful, wonderful learning so much from you.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm sure that our mums have learned just as much. Again, just give us a heads up on your handles and where the mums can find you for more information.
So you can find me on Instagram, I'm Informed Appetite, and then my website, nataliematt.co.za. You're welcome to reach out.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we hope to see you soon. Well, that wraps up today's episode of Lights, Camera, Baby, brought to you by Mama Magic, the trusted name in parenting. A big thank you to our guest, Natalie Matt, for her incredible insights into baby growth and nutrition during that all-important first year. Remember, parenting is a journey, and every baby grows at their own pace. If you ever in doubt, don't hesitate to reach out to a healthcare professional for guidance. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave us a review, and share it with other parents who could use a little extra support. You can also follow Mama Magic on social media for more expert tips and parenting resources. And until next time, keep those cameras rolling and those babies growing.